Welcome. I'm really excited to be talking with you guys a lot again. I've been wondering how things have been going with you. I'm also excited that you guys get to hear me with a normal voice, because I think when I was there last time, I was either just about to get sick or I just got over getting sick. I can't remember which one. I think I was just getting over being sick.
You're just getting out. Yeah.
Yeah, I was
Danny,
just.
the guys don't have the deck with them. Do you want me to print out some copies while you're doing the show?
Yeah, that's probably a good idea, Joanne, because I
Okay,
wasn't
cool.
planning on projecting it or, putting it onto the screen, so.
Okay, well, I'm just going to turn off the webcam so you don't have to stare at my face while I'm doing this.
Okay, no
So
worries.
I'll just get this up. And I'll print a copy for everybody. I'll actually email a copy out to the team. Sorry, it's actually my last week here before I go away on leave, so I've been catching up on stuff, and that sounds like I'm making excuses, but
No
I am.
worries. All good. I hear you're going to Vegas.
Yes.
That's fun. That is very
It is
fun.
very fun. Just got to get through today.
Excellent. Well, have a great time. So our
Well.
purpose today, this morning for you guys, this afternoon over here in the States, is to just review and kind of do a refresher on one-on-ones and feedback. But really, the heart of the call today, I'm hoping, or the meat of the call, is to give you guys a chance to ask me questions now that you've had a couple of months of using this tool. So hopefully you've had some experiences, some real life experiences. I always think it changes how we think about things and the questions that we think about after we actually use some of the tools for a while. So the agenda is a pretty basic agenda. I'm gonna just cover some brief travel with you guys since we are on a WebEx and conference call. Then at about 8:40 your time, we're gonna start with one-on-ones. Again, I'm just gonna do a very quick refresher just to make sure we're all on the same page. But really, then it's a chance for you guys to ask me questions about one-on-ones, or to share with me, this is what's happening in my one-on-ones. How should I handle it? Or this happened, or my direct said this. What should I do? We'll do that for about 20, 25 minutes, and then we're going to talk about feedback. Again, I'm going to do a quick refresher on the feedback model, cover the four steps, and then it's a chance for you guys to ask questions. So, again, I gave one of my directs feedback, and they said X, or they said Y, or I had this situation, and I wanted to give some feedback. How would that feedback sound? And we'll do that for about 30 minutes. That'll take us to 10 o'clock your time, and I'm sorry, 9:45 your time. Then we'll see if we have anything in the parking lot that we need to cover, and we'll close at 10 o'clock your time. So that is the agenda. I see Alex has joined us. We've got a couple of new people. So
Hi,
generally,
Alex, yes,
hey, welcome. So generally, guys, on conference calls, we recommend, or we have a ground rule, to not use the mute line, because the mute button, because as soon as you put a conference call on mute, it probably means you're doing something else. But we do have a little bit of background noise with somebody. It sounds like there's maybe some little ones in the background, which is great. If you do have a little, some background noise where you are, if you wouldn't mind muting it, that would be helpful. If you're somewhere where there is no background noise, please don't mute, because we want you to be engaged and paying attention and asking questions. Also, I know it's hard on a call to ask questions because there might be a delay, and sometimes the technology just makes it a little difficult. So I will do my best to remember to kind of pause more and ask if you guys have any questions. That being said, if you do have a question at any time, just interrupt me. It will not bother me at all. Hopefully you guys know that from our time together. But really, the purpose of this call is for you guys to get a chance to ask me questions now that you've had a chance to use some of the tools. So the more questions you have, the better. So just interrupt me at any time. It would be very helpful to me, since I can't see everybody, if when you do speak up, if you could just quickly say your name so that I know who's talking, that would be very useful. But this is going to be as helpful for you guys as you make it. So, because this is really about you getting your questions and issues discussed. All right, so let's just quickly kind of do a reminder on one-on-ones. As we discussed when I was there before, one-on-ones, we do them weekly. We schedule them ahead of time. It's 30 minutes, right? One-on-ones are 30 minutes, and we let the direct go first. So that's how we do one-on-ones, and the purpose of the one-on-one is to build that relationship with the direct by having lots of communication. Remember, we talked about the sign that we all have as bosses. We all have that sign over our head. And the way we build that relationship and build that trust is having a lot of conversation, a lot of discussion with our direct about what they care about, not just what we care about. Most of the common questions that we get from folks doing one-on-ones is, you know, what do I do if they don't talk very much, or what do I do if they talk too much? What if all they do is talk about work? What if all they do is talk about personal stuff? And we covered a lot of that when we were there, when I was there in person. But that's how we do one-on-ones. That's why we do one-on-ones. So I'm curious, since the training, how your one-on-ones are going. So are you guys, is everybody doing one-on-ones?
Yep.
Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. Excellent. Is there anybody who started doing one-on-ones after the training who wasn't doing them before? If I remember correctly, I think a lot of you were already doing them. Is there anyone who started doing them after the training?
Yes.
Oh, good. Excellent. Okay. So what kinds of questions do you guys have now that you've been doing them for a while?
Does it matter if they, sorry, it's Dave here. Does it matter if they don't go for 30 minutes?
Oh, great question. Does it matter if they don't go for 30 minutes? And who asked the question? I could see your face. I'm sorry.
That's Dave.
Hey, Dave. Does it matter if they don't go for 30 minutes? The short answer is no. Not at all. If your direct covers everything that they want to talk about, and you get through all the stuff you want to talk about, and you finish at 20 minutes or 25 minutes or 18 minutes or something like that, that's fine. That's totally normal. The only time that I would start to get a little worried, Dave, is if that is week after week. If week after week, you know, months, if for 2 or 3 months you notice a pattern where your one-on-ones are only going 15 to 17 minutes, then that might be something to think about. Because in my experience, and most managers that I talk to, and most directs that I talk to, what they tell me is, you know, most one-on-ones, not all, but most of them, 80-85% of it, we feel a little bit of time crunch to get through everything in 30 minutes. Like, there's a lot to cover in 30 minutes. And so if I had a direct that week after week after week we were done in 15, 18, 20 minutes, I would start to pay attention to that. I would start to look back through my notes, and I would look at what types of questions or what types of things are they talking about. Are we really kind of getting into meaty subjects, or is it staying more you know, kind of on the surface? I would probably start to ask more questions during the one-on-ones about how they thought things were going. I mean, I might even say something like, you know, I would expect during a one-on-one that you might ask me about A or B or C, and I noticed that in the last 2 months you haven't asked me about that, so I was just wondering how's that going for you. And I would start to try and dig down. But if, you know, 20% of the time, 25% of the time, it doesn't go the full 30 minutes, I think that's totally normal. And it's probably somewhat a factor of the natural ebb and flow of work and just, you know, kind of life. I mean, there's just going to be some seasons or some months that are busier for you guys, and then there might be a 2 or 3 week time frame where it's not as hectic. And so I think that's totally normal. Does that make sense, Dave?
It does.
And do you have any context to it, or do you not want to go into that?
No, I do. I also have a weekly manager's meeting with my direct reports. So, you know, a lot of the stuff, you know, work-related stuff, we actually talk about as a team in that weekly manager's meeting. So then when it comes time for the one-on-ones, we've already talked about a lot of the things that we would normally talk about or had talked about in the past on a one-on-one. So it kind of, you know, one cancels the other one out almost.
I have the same issues because I'm with the guys on a daily basis. They're always in and out of my door. By the time we sit down for the one-on-one, there's really not a lot to talk about because we've done that just through the course of the natural day.
Yeah.
So anything work-related sort of happens naturally throughout the days, and then when we sit down for the one-on-one, they sort of sit, not stone silence, but they sort of, we both struggle to find something else to talk about because we've done all the personal stuff as a, you know, the natural course, we've done all the work stuff as it happens throughout the day. So there's quite often a little bit of some silence. Of, you know, sometimes they only go for 10 minutes because it's a case of they're looking there at each other and, you know, they've still got a forum to talk, but we've done it all.
Yeah. So a couple of thoughts as I was listening to you guys talk. What can you guys give me a sense of what your agenda for your weekly manager team meet, your weekly team meeting is like?
Yeah, so basically with mine, it's Dave here again. Basically with mine, each one, so I've got three direct reports that I think are all on the line, Peter, uh-huh. Paul and Elton. And each one of them has their own time in the weekly managers meeting to talk about things that are happening in their respective areas.
Right.
You know, whether they're having success with something or challenges with something. So they all have an opportunity to do that. And, you know, we talk about ideas on how we can solve problems and that kind of thing and share ideas. Mm-hmm. And then I talk to them at the end about things we need to focus on, you know, for the coming week or results from the previous week. So, yeah, so that's what the basically
Great.
What the weekly managers meetings are.
Excellent. That's almost exactly the agenda that we recommend for a weekly team meeting is you give every person on the team, you know, five to 10 minutes, generally closer to five, depending on the size of your team, for them to update each other on what's going on kind of in their world, to share successes and challenges and opportunities to collaborate and help each other. And then there's time for you to discuss your issues or things that you need to hear them to hear about. Things that, you know, you need to share with them that it makes more sense for you to tell them in one go than to tell them each individually during the one-on-one. So a couple of thoughts. One of the things that that I try to do after my staff meetings with my team, and I have right now, I have two directs, is I go back to the things that I talked about during the team meeting, during the staff meeting, and I revisit that list with them one-on-one, and I ask them, do you have any questions about what we discussed? Are you clear on what your part in that's going to be? Are you clear in what your role or what's expected? Or sometimes I just clarify something, or if they asked a question or they talked about something during the staff meeting, I'll often try to go back and revisit and see if there's anything there that I need to dig down in. But I have noticed, I don't do staff meetings every week because there's only three of us. I generally try and do it about every other week. And I have noticed on the weeks that we have a team meeting that my one-on-ones are often a little bit shorter as well. They're, instead of being, you know, 25 to 30 minutes, they tend to be closer to about 18 to 20 minutes. So I think that's totally natural. If you feel good, Dave, about the relationship with your guys, and you feel like they're getting what they need out of the one-on-one and you're getting what you need out of the one-on-one, and then I would not worry about it. If you're between the one-on-ones and the staff meeting, you're covering what you need to cover, then I'd say, you know, hey, that's an extra 10 or 15 minutes that you're getting back on your calendar every week. Where I just try and pay attention is just asking myself, I just find it's a good check for me. Am I doing everything I can to have a good relationship with this person? And that's, I just get that by going back and looking through my notes and paying attention to trends and what they talked about. And also just asking myself, when I was in their role, or if I were in their role, what kinds of things would I be experiencing? What kinds of things, when I was in their role, what kinds of things was I struggling with? And then I will try to, you know, ask them about them. So if it has forced me, when I've had that issue, to be a little bit more proactive in thinking about maybe, I don't want to say prodding them, but priming the pump a little bit, by asking them, how's this going? When I was doing your job, I really struggled with this. How's that going for you? Just to make sure that the communication, that they feel comfortable bringing those things up. And sometimes, if as a boss, we say, hey, when I was doing that, I struggled with this. How's that going for you? It makes them more comfortable to say, yeah, you know, I am struggling a little bit with that. So I just use it as a way to, the time, I just use it as a way to make sure the relationship is as good as it can be. But again, Dave, if you feel like the relationship is good, then I wouldn't worry about it. What other questions?
We suggest the one-on-ones, it's almost like we're trying to find new business to talk about. I like the fact of, you know, going back and rediscussing what they've talked about previously. So on Monday you came to me about this, maybe that work and that type of thing. So we're not always looking for the new stuff, we're going back over.
And they may not be comfortable tabling things with you in front of the rest of the guys. So I guess opening it up again and having that conversation to say, we talked about this, did you have any more thoughts on it? It could just recap and reinforce your message. Yeah.
And if there's something that's maybe a little, you know, a little difficult that we talked about during the team meeting, or a little controversial, or you know, people had strong feelings about, you know, I try and pay attention to the body language. And even if during the staff meeting they say, oh yeah, that's fine, but their body language says it's not, then I go back and talk to them about that. Like, I know you said in the staff meeting you were okay with this, but you know, I noticed you kind of, your body language said maybe you were struggling a little bit, or I just wanted to make sure you're really okay with it. Because like Joanne said, they might have concerns that they don't feel comfortable bringing up in front of the whole team.
Hey, Benny, can I just ask, I'm not sure if it's Pete or someone else's microphone. It sounds like it's scraping against their clothing. Can everyone that's on the call just mute your phone unless you want to speak? Okay.
Yeah, we're getting a little bit of background noise. Yeah.
I think someone on the line had a question for Paul. Was it Paul? They're all on mute now.
Paul or Alex or Chris, did any of you guys have a question?
If someone's talking, we can't hear you.
It's Chris Downing.
Hey, Chris.
Nothing, though.
Hey, just a quick question in regards to routine. I do my one-to-ones each Friday, and it's working beautifully, of course, because they know the time and everything that the call's going to come through. But occasionally, I've been doing a bit of work lately overseas, so I went away for 2 weeks at a time. So I was away for two Fridays. Kind of felt I was okay with a one Friday, but then the second Friday was sort of pushing my luck. It's 2 weeks without the communication, and so I pushed it out to a Monday. But is that getting a bit too far away, or is there any recommendations as to how to communicate when it can be a bit costly overseas, of course, to keep those one-to-ones up?
Yeah. I just got home from a 2-week international trip. I was back in Sydney for 6 days, and then I was in China for 7 days. So it's definitely harder when you're traveling internationally, because the time zones can be, instead of a difference of 3 or 4 hours, you're talking about a difference of 13, 15, 16 hours, which can be much more difficult. What we recommend is, when you know you're going to be away or traveling during the time that you schedule, to at that time go ahead and reschedule it. And that may mean, Chris, that you end up going 8 or 9 or 10 days between one-on-ones, which, I mean, it's not ideal, but it's better than going 14 or 16 days. Or it may mean that you only have 4 days in between a one-on-one. You might end up doing one on a Friday and then doing it again, you know, on Tuesday the next week, and in which case that's probably going to be a shorter one-on-one again. And we recommend, when you're traveling, we have a podcast on doing one-on-ones when you're traveling, and we recommend you think about, you do have to get a little bit more creative, and you think about, can I do this one-on-one in the airport? Like, can I schedule it so that I get to the airport a little bit earlier and I go to an airline club or, you know, a quieter spot in the airport and do my one-on-one there? Or can I, am I going to have free time over lunch? Can I do a one-on-one, you know, while everybody else is at lunch and I take a shorter lunch? Usually when we're traveling, with a few exceptions, often we're back in our room and done for the day by, you know, 6 or 7 o'clock. And if you're traveling, if you're international, at 7 o'clock your time, it's possible that that's still during the workday for your people. So I do a lot of one-on-ones when I'm traveling at between 6 and 9 o'clock at night, because I'm in my hotel room, I'm sitting there, you know, what am I going to do anyway? I'm probably working anyway. So I would much rather do a one-on-one at 7 o'clock at night when I'm traveling, rather than doing it the day and a half that I'm back home. Because when I'm home, I try to, be done earlier in the day so I can spend time with my family, because I'm only home for 2 days a week. So we try to be, a little bit more creative, thinking about when you can do it, during times that you might not normally do it if you were not traveling. Sometimes, again, with the international, when I was in Australia, I did one-on-ones every single morning at 6 o'clock in the morning before I had to be at the conference. So I had a one-on-one every morning from 6 to 6:30, and then I would get ready for my day and be downstairs by 7:30. So it's probably going to be a little bit harder on you, Chris, because you're probably looking at, depending on the time zones, you're looking at doing that some earlier in the morning or later at night. So, you know, if you're a morning person or a night person, you can think about that. But again, I the other thing I like to do is get to the airports early, and I've done a lot of one-on-ones in airports too. I generally try to not go more than 2 weeks, if possible. There have been times when I've been traveling internationally where it's just the time zone difference and schedules just did not make it possible. I think when I was in Australia with you guys, I was there for a week, and I think that week I may not have done one-on-ones. Or recently there was a week where I was traveling internationally, and I said, guys, we're not going to do any one-on-ones, because with the time zones and their travel schedule, because my team was all traveling that week too, we could not find 30 minutes that we could do it, because they were also traveling and everything during the day. And so we had a week that we missed. And 1 week every once in a while like that, it's like, you know, when you go on holiday, it's not going to be the end of the world. If I'm going to be gone, though, Chris, for 2 weeks, I would try to do one-on-ones at least one of those 2 weeks. You might not be able to do it both weeks, and that's okay, but I would try to do it at least one of those weeks. Does that help?
Yeah, it does.
I think Alex was starting to talk as well.
Oh, Alex, go ahead.
No, I just said I didn't have any questions, that was all.
Okay.
Oh, right. Hey, Danny, I think the biggest thing, unless anyone else has got questions on one-on-ones, I think the biggest area where the team are probably struggling maybe is the feedback.
Mm-hmm.
We did a post-workshop survey with the team and across the board. I mean, generally, some managers have had the feedback that they've increased their feedback to their team, but there was quite a few that basically said the feedback hadn't necessarily changed. And I think the one-on-ones is a little bit easier because they're sort of scheduled in their pre-planned and you just do it. But feedback is something that you have to consciously do. So maybe it would be worth spending some time now on the feedback, unless anyone's got any other questions one-on-ones. Steve, Jeeves, Alex, one-on-ones? Nah?
Yeah, so the first thing I want you guys to know is that's totally normal. Don't be too hard on yourselves. Feedback is where we see the biggest drop in implementation of the Trinity tools. One-on-ones, like I think you said, Joanne, because it's scheduled, it's something that you plan ahead. And, you know, really the hardest thing is making the time on your calendar. And once you do that, they're fairly easy. They're not always the most fun thing to do, and when you're busy, it can be hard to take that 30 minutes, but it's, for the most part, a fairly low bar. So we get really high implementation with one-on-ones, and then when it comes time to roll out feedback, it drops way, way down. So that's totally normal. I will tell you guys, I've been doing this for years using these tools, and I'm still not where I need to be with feedback. And I think that's normal. And so I don't want you guys to be too hard on yourselves. And the one thing that I'll just share with you that works for me is I can talk myself out of giving feedback during the week because I'm busy and my people are busy. But my one-on-ones are like, there's no excuse to not give some feedback during the one-on-one. And so I have it as a personal standard for myself that I'm going to give at least one piece of feedback every one-on-one because I probably have let myself off the hook during the week. But the one-on-one, it's like there's no reason. I'm here. My direct is here. I have the agenda. And there's no reason to not give feedback. That being said, I try to make sure that I'm giving more positive feedback than negative because I don't want the one-on-one to turn into I'm just going to give you a bunch of negative feedback because then they won't like coming to the one-on-one. So I try to give more positive feedback. And as we talked about, since they're doing more stuff right than not, that's probably a good thing because my inclination is to talk about the mistakes that they're making. And so it's a good reminder to me to focus on the positive. I put all four steps on one slide for you guys just as a reminder, right? You ask, can I give you some feedback? You describe what they did. When you do this, here's what happens. And then you ask for them to do better in the future. And the focus is on the future, not on the past. I again just want to tell you guys it's totally normal to not be struggling the most with feedback. What I would encourage you to do is those of you who are managing managers, those of you who have directs who are managers, the best way, the most effective way that you can increase them giving feedback to their directs is to ask them in every single one-on-one, how many feedbacks did you give this week? And if you just make that a standard question during every one-on-one, you're not asking them how it's going, you're just asking how many did you give? I was gonna say it's like magic, but it's not. The things that get measured are the things that get done, right? That's why we measure things, because we know when we measure them, there's a higher likelihood that it's gonna get done. And just by asking every single week, your directs know, oh my gosh, my boss is gonna ask me, I wanna be able to give a good answer. And so just asking every week increases the amount of feedback that they are going to give. If you are not a manager of managers, okay, you manage individual contributors, the best way that I have learned to give, to increase the amount of feedback I'm giving, is to measure myself. Your boss might not be asking you how much feedback have you given this week, but you can measure it yourself. And what we recommend is you set a goal of one piece of feedback every day, just one. If you have three directs, it's not one for each of them. It's you have three directs and one of them is going to get some feedback. And then after you go a couple of days and you've done that and you've done it consistently every day, then you say, okay, now my goal is two pieces of feedback every day. And after you do that a couple of days, now my goal is three pieces of feedback every day. And you just work your way up to it, just like any other behavioral change. If you set a goal and you say, by March 15th, I want to be giving three pieces of feedback a day, or by March 15th, I want to be giving an average of 10 pieces of feedback per week. Set a goal and then start measuring yourself on it. And you can certainly, if your boss is doing one-on-ones with you, which hopefully they are, you can report on it during your one-on-one. Hey, boss, I gave four pieces of feedback this week. Hey, boss, I gave six pieces of feedback this week. And having that sense of accountability that you're going to be reporting in can increase the chances that you'll hit your goal. But it's just like anything, right? If you want to lose weight, they tell you set a goal and measure it, and they tell you tell a friend because of the accountability. And this is really no different than that. So don't beat yourselves up too hard, and start measuring it, because when you start measuring it, you naturally will start to do it more because you know it's being measured.
I actually have a question on behalf of Mark Abdi, who can't be here with us this morning.
Yes.
On feedback. So Mark's our operations director, and I think one of the things that Mark maybe struggled with a little bit was the whole, and even some other managers as well. So Dan, our MD, my boss, has used the line, can I give you some feedback? And it makes me clam up. I don't know. For some reason, I think, shit, what have I done wrong?
Yeah.
And it's never been negative, but I gave Dan the feedback to say, you know, perhaps you can use a different one. Like, if he says, can I share something with you, then I'm a lot more relaxed.
Yeah.
But when he uses that line, I clench up for some reason. But so my question is, can we use a different line as opposed to, can I give you some feedback? Is it more just about the consistency of what you say or using that exact line? And Mark's question was, what if you've given someone feedback on multiple occasions and you've used the model and you've given them feedback several times, but you have to keep giving them that same feedback?
Okay, great. So the first question, can you use a different question? Absolutely. We want you to use whatever is going to work the best for you. For a long time before I came to Manager Tools, the question I used my people was that exact, can I share something with you? Because for most people, it's the word feedback carries some baggage with it. And you can get, it is possible to get beyond that, Joanne, to get beyond that reaction when you hear your boss say, can I give you some feedback? But I won't lie to you, it takes a while. I mean, I've known this model for 15 years. I've used this model for 15 years. And when I came to work at Manager Tools for Mark, because he said, can I give you some feedback? I would say it took a good 2.5 years for me to not feel nervous when I heard him say that. And I've known him for, you know, two decades. It's all in our heads, but it's real and it's there. And I think it's because most of us have experience with a boss in our history who, you know, when they said, hey, I have some feedback for you, 99% of the time it was bad. I mean, we learned, and, you know, the definition of wisdom is learning from the past. And so it's wise to feel nervous because your experience has told you this is probably not going to be good. And so that's totally normal. And so we don't want to get hung up on what question you use. You can use any question you want. Can I share something with you? Can we talk about what happened in that meeting? hey, I have some thoughts on the presentation with the customer. Is now a good time to talk about it? Whatever you want to use. And you don't even have to use the same one every time. I like to use the same one because it's just one less thing for me to think about, but you can certainly use different questions with different people or different situations. The important thing is that you're asking for permission. You know, hey, is now a good time to share some thoughts with you? Hey, I made some notes from our meeting. Is now a good time to go over them? Whatever you want to say is totally fine. And I think it's smart to pay attention to that because if the direct is feeling that anxiety, then you know that's not good. And we want our directs to be completely comfortable receiving feedback. So that's the answer to the first question, Joanne. In fact, we have a podcast. I think it's called There's No Magic in the Word Feedback. I think that's the name of the podcast, which that podcast will walk you through some other ideas for other questions. But it basically says you can ask whatever question you want. Absolutely. Mark's question about what if they don't, what if I've given them some feedback and I'm still having to give the same feedback. So in your deck on slide 6, I gave you a link to the podcast on systemic feedback. So this is the answer to, I've given the feedback and the person hasn't changed their behavior. They're still doing it. They didn't improve. They didn't do better. And our recommendation there is after you've given the person 7 pieces of feedback, you've given them 7 chances to improve, then the feedback model changes to systemic feedback. And the model is still the same. It's still 4 steps. What changes really is what you're giving them feedback on. Okay, so let's say it's that the person has missed deadlines. You've given them 7 pieces of feedback because they missed a deadline on a report, they missed a deadline for some other work, right? They're missing deadlines. After you've given them 7 pieces of feedback, and there's a reason why we recommend 7, and I'll explain that to you in a moment, then the feedback changes to systemic feedback. And this is why step 4 in the model is so important. This is why asking, can you do that better next time, and getting a commitment from them to do better is so important. Because what's happening is you're asking them to change, and they're saying, yes, I will change, and then they're not changing. So now the feedback is going to not be about them missing deadlines. Systemic feedback is now about the fact that they have committed, that they've made a commitment to do something, and they're failing to do it. So it sounds like this. Can I give you some feedback, or can I share something with you? When you tell me 7 times that you're going to improve and do a better job making your deadlines, and you don't make your deadlines, here's what happens. I wonder if you have a problem keeping your word, right? I wonder if you're out making promises to customers and then not fulfilling them. It makes me worry about if I can trust you, because you're making commitments and you're not keeping them. What are you going to do differently about that? And so the feedback changes from when you miss deadlines, here's what happens, to when you make a commitment repeatedly and you fail to uphold your commitment, this is what happens. I lose trust in you. I worry about what you're saying to customers. I worry about other commitments that you're making. And then you're going to ask, you're not going to say, can you do that differently? You're going to say, what are you going to do differently? Because what you want to hear from them is, I'm going to keep my word. I am going to do what I say I'm going to do. And typically when we talk about this in person, I kind of role play it out. And guys, if you could hear it, the first 7 times you deliver it exactly the same, and all of those 7 pieces of feedback about, in this example, missing deadlines, you deliver it the exact same way. That very quick, that very casual, can I give you some feedback? When you miss a deadline, it's hard, it slows things down, whatever. We don't want you escalating because we want you to give them every possible chance to get better without feeling like they're in trouble. Because think about this, guys. If you've ever had a bad week, like we've all had those weeks where it feels like nothing goes right, right? It's like you're late and the car breaks down and, you know, the kids got sick and the dog got out and you had to chase them around the neighborhood for 45 minutes. And it's just like bad week. If your boss kind of, you know, lowers the boom, as we say, like if you kind of quote unquote get in trouble with your boss when you're just kind of having a bad week, then it destroys the relationship with your boss. You feel like, wow, even when I'm having a bad week, my boss doesn't give, you know, cut me any slack, doesn't give me a break. And so we recommend 7 because it's very possible, guys, if we use the missed deadlines. It's very possible for somebody to miss 2 or 3 or 4 deadlines and it just be because they're just, you know, having a bad week. It's pretty small chances that they're going to miss 7 deadlines, and every single one of those times is explainable or understandable. There's a difference between doing something twice and doing it 7 times, particularly after your boss has told you about it. I mean, if your boss has told you about something 7 times and you're still not doing what your boss has asked you, that's a demonstrated lack of willingness to change your behavior. 2 times is not. And so we want to say 7. We say 7 because we want it to be totally crystal clear to you, to your direct, and to Dan or Joanne or whoever you're, as a manager, you're having to go and share this with or get input from, that, hey, I've given them every chance. Because if you've ever, Joanne's great HR for you guys. I've worked in some organizations where we did not have great HR. But any good HR person, when you go and you tell them, hey, I'm having a problem with this person, they're missing deadlines, the first thing they're going to say to you is, have you talked to them about it? Right, Joanne? That's the first thing. They're always going to ask you, have you talked to them about it? And if you can say, if you can look at Joanne and say, yes, I've talked to him about this 7 times in the last 15 days. Okay, that is clearly them not changing. That's clearly them knowing that they're not doing what's expected and they're not changing. If you go to Joanne and say, hey, yeah, I've talked to them. I've talked to him about it twice. Chances are she's going to say, well, you know, twice, like, I don't know that's enough. I don't know. She might say that's enough, but she might say that might not be enough.
When you said 7 times, there were some raised eyebrows.
I know.
Like, how long are you going to let people get away with things? And
yeah.
I think it's important to note that if it's something catastrophic or something that breaks company policy or something that's serious, give someone 7 chances. Yeah. But this is more about things like missing deadlines or those little things that perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, with feedback, you may actually sweep them under the carpet, but I think this whole model is not sweeping them aside and then allowing them to build up 7 times and
that's right.
And, you know, shit hits the fan. It's actually nipping them in the bud at each little instance, and then when you've got a collective, you know, small group of 7 occasions,
right.
That's when you can probably take it to that next level.
Absolutely, yeah. If you've got somebody who is, sexually harassing somebody. Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
About to jump in with something. This is just a sexual harassment.
Yeah, right. I was just saying, we don't give feedback on sexual harassment. That's not right. Yeah, if somebody is doing something that violates a safety procedure, right? They're not wearing their hard hat, something like that. Then those are not things to give feedback on. But yeah, these are the small, this is the stuff that as managers, it just drives us crazy. Like, why can't they just do what I'm asking them to do? Yeah, then it's 7. So I'm sorry, Dave, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Peter, Paul, and Elton, don't even think about making me give you 7 pieces of feedback.
Yeah. So here's a great thing, and I'm sure they never would because they're good guys. Here's the great thing about this, guys. Here's the great thing about the seven. I have only had to do this in 15 years twice. I have only had somebody continue to do the thing, not change, seven times. I've only had to use systemic feedback twice in 7 years. And both of those times ended up, the net result, the net ending was that both of those people ended up being terminated. Because, guys, look, if somebody is not getting better after you've given seven pieces of very polite, respectful, not yelling, not angry, respectfully delivered feedback, chances are there are other performance issues. There's going to be other things going on. And Mark will tell you in 25 plus years of doing this, he's used systemic feedback three times. And I think two out of his three ended in termination. So because one of the other reasons why you go to seven is because chances are somebody who goes to seven is going to have other performance issues. And by the time you go in and talk to Joanne and Dan about recommending termination or recommending a next step, you want to have so much evidence. You want to have so many examples of behaviors and so many examples of that you talked to them and you told them, and there's no way they can't possibly not understand what we want from them, that it's a no-brainer that Joanne and Dan look at you and say, absolutely, we support you. Because what's so disheartening as managers is we talk to our directs about something, they don't change. We go to HR and we say, hey, we want to take some action. And HR says, you know what? No, you got to give the person another chance. And then that's when as managers, we start to feel, oh my gosh, this is so hard. And you want that conversation with Joanne and Dan to be, oh, absolutely. It's clear you've given this person, what you want Joanne and Dan to say is you've given them more chances than we would have, because then you know, okay, I've done everything I can. And it's time for the next step. You want it to be a slam dunk.
How are you guys going with the feedback? It might be worth sort of just going around the room, Danny, and perhaps if there's anything that comes up. Matt, how are you going with the feedback?
I'm so sorry. I can't hear Matt. I'm so sorry.
I'm just saying, during the course of the day, sometimes you do forget to give that type of feedback, whether it be positive or negative. So I sort of do, I don't write it down or check it, but I just consciously make sure that I am giving a certain number of feedback per day to different people.
So you've set yourself a target already?
Not a formal target, but it's just a conscious to do it. And I find it easier at the end of the day to look back and go, right, you did this well today, or you did this not so well today. And the last 10, 15 minutes of the day, do the feedback then. It's not as it happens, but it's still relatively fresh because during the day, you just sort of going through it type thing. So.
And Matt's our warehouse manager, so his guys would smash out the work during the day and then things would quieten down at the end of the day, and that's when you can kind of circulate and say, look, guys, great job today, or this didn't go so well.
Rather than stopping the flow of the day, I tend to do it the last 10, 15 minutes just to sort of review what happened.
Have you noticed a difference in the team, in your relationships or anything since you've been doing that?
I have. Positive feedback's really good. As positive feedback, they leave on a high.
Yes.
So the next day they're coming back in on that high. The not so positive feedback also gives them a chance outside of work to start thinking about it.
Mm.
Where if you're doing that not so positive feedback during the day, it plays on their mind for the next 3 hours.
Yeah, and affects their work.
Affects their workload. So that's why I find at the end of the day, it's the best time to do it.
Well done. Good job. Geez.
I love that, Matt. I used to do a very similar technique. I had previously about a 75 to 90 minute commute home, and my directs, because of the work we did, were often working night meetings, and so they were often in their cars too, and I would use that drive home to call them and give them feedback. And if they didn't answer, I usually would just leave a message and say, hey, I just wanted to say thank you for that thing you did. But if they answered, I would say, hey, can I share something with you? And it, because I did it so much, it became a joke. Like they called it the commute feedback. It was like, Danny's commuting, she's going to call you and give you some feedback. But because of during the day, you're just going, right? And then I'm sitting in the car for 75 minutes and I'm thinking, oh, I should have given feedback for that. I should have given feedback for that. And so I just started picking up my phone and calling. So I love that. That's great.
Jace?
The tool is great. And I do try and consciously feedback. One thing I picked up from Danny, which I was implementing from week, is aiming to give at least one piece of positive feedback during the one-on-one.
Yeah.
So, you know, I try and make that a bit more regular.
Yeah.
And I mean, the biggest thing that came through in our team survey results, or one of the biggest things, is recognition. Our people aren't looking for pay rises or, you know, extra money or accolades, but they're just looking for that. Thank you. Yeah. And look, it's very easy when shit hits the fan to say, look, guys, we've cocked this up. Like, this can't happen again. But I think, you know, using the one-on-ones, Steve, just to provide that positive feedback, I think it makes people look forward to the one-on-ones. It doesn't make it a negative experience, but also it gets that feedback happening. So, you know, the team are looking for more feedback, as most of us are, and they're looking for recognition. And it's not, you know, monetary or anything like that. It's just recognition of the work that they're doing so that they feel valued.
Yes. We have a podcast on that. I can't remember the exact name. But it basically says, it's in our feedback section on our website, and it basically says that if the feedback model, you know, you're struggling a little bit with it, which is totally normal, just set yourself a goal to just say thank you, because saying thank you, hey, thank you for doing X, right? You're still telling them the behavior that they did has a very similar effect on directs as using the positive feedback model. But now you still have to tell them what they did. You can't just say, hey, thanks for a great job today. I mean, you can, but that's not going to have the same effect. But when you say, hey, I want to thank you for the way that you spent the extra 15 minutes with that customer, that was great. The impact, the result within the direct is very similar, very close to using all four steps of the model. So just saying thank you more can be very powerful. So well done.
Steve?
So my one-on-ones usually have a question that I ask them what went well for them this week. So based on what they come back to me with, it's usually I did hear about that, you know, excellent job. If I hadn't already talked to them about it, as it happened. And then if there's anything I need to improve, I'll normally take it back to a specific scenario or actual thing that happened and go, right, when would this happen? So I need you to do it this way next time, or I'll take them through. You've been having more returns lately. Take me through how you do the process, and then I'll run them through how the correct way to do it if they are doing it wrong.
Nice. Excellent.
Alex?
Yeah.
How are you going with feedback? Are you providing as much as you think you should or can?
I think the positive feedback is what drives a bit more discussion in the one-on-one rather than just talking about crap, so to speak. But the feedback is, I try and make it as constructive as possible so that, you know, my direct can, you know, understand why it's good, you know what I mean? And basically what we then do is we look at some of those good methods and we try and implement them in other things that we're working on. And what I'm trying to do with feedback as well is certain things that I get lumped onto me, I try and delegate it to my direct through feedback. So I say that, you know, that we did such a good job on such and such. I've got this that needs to be done. Can we...
Recognizing that they handled that situation well.
Developing that person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Excellent. Very good.
Yeah, look, I like it, and I think it works well, but I know that I haven't done enough of it, and I've reached the point where I should start thinking about introducing media feedback as well, and I haven't yet, because I don't think I've given enough positive feedback over the last 2 or 3 months. So I guess my question is, should I focus more on the positive feedback and get that working well and get my guys comfortable before introducing negative feedback?
Yeah, I would. If your gut is telling you that you don't think you've done as well as you would like to, then I would listen to that. If that's what your instinct is telling you, then I would absolutely listen to that. Because every time that I have ignored that in myself, where I was in my, you know, my gut was telling me I don't think it's ready yet. I don't think I've done a good job yet. I don't think they're ready, and I ignored it. It did not go well. And so I would listen to that voice in your head, because you've probably picked up something, maybe not that you're consciously aware of yet, but there's something going on that's telling you, I don't think I've done everything I could yet. And I would just listen to it, because it had not gone well when I pushed forward. So yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, look, I had some feedback that I wasn't giving enough feedback. So, I mean, this week, for example, I had some monthly reports come through from my team, and I actually picked up the phone and gave them a call and said, hey guys, I just wanted to give you some feedback on the reports that you did. I went through the reports and told them what I really liked in there that they'd done. And it was quite interesting, because one of the guys turned around at the end of it and said, but? And I said, no, there's no buts. It's all good. I'm really, really happy with the work you've done here. Thanks very much.
Nice.
So, yeah, so I guess it's just, not just waiting for one-on-ones or anything like that. For me, I can be giving feedback at any time.
Excellent.
I try and give it via email, the good email comes through, and I guess you try and give it to the wider teams as well. Like, I don't just give it to my guy. Like, I think it's good to give anybody feedback if they want something really good,
Anyone on the phone want to contribute?
It's possible here. Danny, I was just going on from Dave's, a couple of scenarios that happened this week where some of the guys out on the road have done some stuff really good and achieved some really good results. A bit like Dave, I'll give them the feedback and congratulate them straight up. Should we be sort of then, when we get to our one-on-ones, sort of reminding them again what a good job they did? Or, because it happens a lot day to day. It could be good or bad. Should we bring them up in our one-on-ones with them?
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I don't see any problem with that. I would, you want to be careful about only doing stuff in public with the whole team, because you lose the opportunity to give the individual feedback, and some people are not comfortable being recognized in front of the whole team, and so you want to think about that. Sometimes we assume that everybody likes to be praised in public, and that's not necessarily true. Some people get really uncomfortable with it. So, and sometimes people get uncomfortable with what you're praising them for in front of the team. Generally speaking, I like to be praised in front of the whole team, but there are some things that I do that if Mark or Mike say, hey, Danny did a great job with that in front of everybody, it makes me feel uncomfortable because of the nature of the work. And so you want to think about those types of things. But generally, yeah, if you mention something in front of the whole team and then you want to talk to them personally and maybe get more specific, like, here's why I really like that, or particularly if it's something that you know they've been working on, you might not want to say that in front of the whole team, right? hey, Joe's really been working hard on this and he really did great with it this week. That's like, it's like a criticism and a compliment, which isn't great. But you could have that conversation in private, right? Joe, I mentioned to everybody on the team last week that you did a great job with this. And I just wanted to tell you privately again, how grateful, how impressed I am, because I know you've really been working hard on that for the last several months and it really shows. So yeah, absolutely.
Can I just ask the one question about behavioral changes? I've had an instance where we've done some behavioral changes outside of one-on-one. So when you bring them into your one-on-one, do you just go back to normal feedback or do you go to systemic feedback?
Okay, Paul, I'm sorry. I don't think I'm understanding the question. Can you give me an example or?
So behavioral changes, they've been addressed outside of our one-on-one.
Yes.
So then linking that with our one-on-one, do we do normal feedback or do we go to systemic feedback?
I think you would do normal feedback if I'm understanding the question correctly. Until you get to that seven, until you get to the point where there's clearly a demonstrated pattern of them failing to get better. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yep.
Yeah. Chris or Alex, you guys have anything you want to share?
Chris here, Danny. Obviously, one-to-ones for me are all with sales teams, so getting them to talk isn't really a problem at all. I find that it took a little while to get the balance of not just being all about work and making them feel like they were just reporting on the week, and it was more of a balance about who they are. And, you know, a lot of the times with the sales guys, the results they're getting here can be very much directed by things that might be going on in their home life and such like, and trying to find some breakthrough ways to do it where it didn't feel invasive, sort of talking about their private life. And really effective one was that when we were in the field, as part of the objectives of talking to a company, you know, I made a suggestion of saying when we're in these calls, let's find out something about the company we didn't know and also something about the person personally we didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you can come out quite enriched by that and obviously improve the rapport with the client as well. And then I reflect on them saying when we're doing the one-to-ones, I want to know a bit about both sides of you for the same reasons that you got a lot out of that, or so do I. And, but then you've got to be genuine about it too. You don't want to just sort of say, hey, how's your home life going and not really care about it.
Right.
So I found that finding a parallel for why it was important for them to talk about all aspects rather than just about work was really important and made a big difference for me.
That's excellent. And tying it back to the work that they're doing, I think is really smart.
The only question I've got on feedback, Danny, is actually going back up the chain. And there was an email sent out on the manager tools, weekly emails, and saying never give feedback up the chain, which,
Yeah, that's probably one of our more controversial recommendations. So I want to be clear. When we say don't give feedback to your boss or don't give feedback up into the organization, we are not talking about situations where you are asked for your input on, hey, how can we do this better? Or, hey, what suggestions do you have, right? Like if there's a process or a system and you are being asked, hey, how can we make this process or this system meet your needs better? That's not what we're talking about. That's, you know, the organization asking you for your input or your boss asking you for your input. If your boss asks you, hey, what do you think about X or Y, or that's your boss asking for input, and that's not what we're talking about. When we say don't give feedback to your boss or don't give feedback of the organization, we mean that four-step model. We recommend you don't go to your boss and say to your boss, hey, boss, can I give you some feedback? When you do this, it doesn't work for me. Could you do that better? And you can hear just from thinking about it, right, like it just doesn't fit in that boss-direct relationship. because of the sign. It's using the wrong tool for what you're trying to accomplish. It's saying, it's as though you are trying to put a screw in the wall and you're using a hammer. You're going to damage the wall around the screw. You need to use the right tool for the time. So and generally speaking, because we don't know every single person who listens to our podcast, we don't know their situation and their boss. And because, as much as we hate it, there are bad bosses out there and unethical bosses out there. I don't think this is true for you guys, having met you and having met Dan. But we have, you know, a couple million listeners, and we don't know all of their bosses. There are bosses who, if you tried to give them some input on what they're doing, if you did say to them, there are some bosses who you said, hey, can I share something with you? They would say, absolutely. There are some bosses, if you said, hey, can I share something with you? They would say yes. And then when you did, they would hold it against you. They would find a way to kind of punish you. We've talked to more people than we like to think about who said, yep, I gave my boss some feedback, and 6 months later, I was looking for another job. And not that necessarily that feedback caused their boss to fire them, but it damaged the relationship. And it caused there to be, you know, some negative things in the relationship, and then that can lead to another negative, and another negative, and another negative. And we would never recommend that a manager fire somebody for giving them feedback, because as managers, we ought to be open to our directs sharing. We ought to want our directs to share with us how we can manage them better. But there's a big difference between saying managers ought to be open to feedback and, oh, yes, give your boss feedback, because managers ought to be open to it. Just because they ought to be open to it doesn't mean they all are. And our worst nightmare is that somebody listens to one of our podcasts and does what we recommend and then ends up looking for a job. And so we tend to go on the conservative side and say, you know what? Because we don't know people's bosses, we're going to protect them. We're going to give you guidance that protects you from the possibility of an unethical boss. And so we say, don't give feedback to your boss. Don't give feedback up into the organization, because you have no control over how the organization or how your boss may respond to that and handle that. But again, this is not...
We're in a position where Dan seeks feedback, and I think you know, it all depends on the relationship. It all depends on whether or not your boss is truly open to it as well, because sometimes they might even say, well, have you got feedback for me? But then they don't take it on board very well. So I think, you know, I understand where that email was coming from, whilst it doesn't apply necessarily for us.
Yeah, it's funny because way back when Manager's Tools was still kind of new, this is probably like 10 years ago, I was doing one-on-ones, I was doing feedback with my directs, and I sent them to Manager's Tools training and all of that. And then I think the podcast was released that said, don't give feedback to your boss. And I remember, and I actually posted in the forums, and it's still in there. You can go and look. I posted on the Manager Tools forums, you know what? You're telling my people not to give me feedback, but I want to know how I can do better. So help me out here. Why are you telling them to not do something that I want them to do? And because Mark knew me, his response was, Danny, if your directs came to me and said, Danny is asking me for feedback, should I give it? I would tell them yes, because I know you, and I know you're not the type of person who would hold that against them. But again, we don't know every single person's boss, right? So, you know, Dan seems like a stand-up, straight-up guy, and, you know, I would absolutely say he seems like the kind of person that would welcome it. And if he's asking for it and you feel like you have a good relationship with him, then, you know, trust what your experience is telling you. But when people just come up to me and say, hey, I want to give my boss some feedback, should I? I say no, because I don't know your boss, and I don't know if they're going to be able to take it or not. Yeah.
So we've got about 15 minutes left, Danny. I guess I just want to throw it out there. Is there, and it doesn't have to be around feedback or one-on-ones, but just in relation to manager tools, is there any burning question in people's minds or anything, you know, any specific issue that you want to talk through or anything that came through in your post-workshop feedback that you want to explore further? Because this is a good opportunity now. You know, we've got Danny here. We've got the team in the room. Has anyone got anything that they want to throw out there? No? Okay. Danny, would it be worth just spending the last 15 minutes talking a little bit about the coaching side, which is obviously like the next step?
Yeah.
But would it be worth maybe just covering off that at a high level?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes? Yeah, okay. And I'm going to make a note, Joanne. I'm going to send you some stuff so that you can forward out to everybody. Our coaching model, I'll send Joanne the links to the podcast so that you don't have to go searching for them. The biggest thing I like to tell people about our coaching model is we differentiate between coaching and feedback. A lot of people, a lot of managers, when we talk about coaching, we often use the word coaching the way we at Manager Tools use feedback, right? So a lot of times managers will say something like, oh, my direct kind of, you know, they messed this thing up a little bit. They didn't do a great job in that customer meeting or on that sales call. I need to coach them on it. What we would say is, no, you need to give them some feedback, right? They did some stuff in that customer meeting that you don't think was great. You just need to give them some feedback on those specific things. Coaching is a sustained, longer term, like at least 3 months, process where you're going to lay out a plan with the direct to say, okay, you are here, you're at this level, you're at level two in this skill or with this ability or this thing we need you to do. And by 6 months from now, you're going to be at level six. And it's a plan that you lay out with your direct to get them from level two to level six. And so the first thing you do is you set a goal. So if you were, let's say you were wanting to coach somebody on project management, you would say, by March 31st, by 31 March, you will manage a project, and that project will be delivered on time, on budget, and in scope, for example. So it's a specific goal with a deadline and a description of what they're going to do by the deadline. By March 31st, you will deliver, you will be making an average of 20 sales calls per month or per week. I don't know what's realistic for you guys, but right, that type of thing. Then you're going to, with your direct, you're going to come up with a list of places that they can go or people or resources or websites or courses or books or whatever, resources that they can use to learn, in this example, project management. So you're going to brainstorm like for a minute or two. Where can they go to learn about project management? What a lot of managers do is when we have a direct who we want to help get better, we think I have to help them get better. I have to train them on this thing, right? I have to train them on project management. And so because we're already so busy, we don't do very, very much coaching. What we have done is we've said, no, you coach and somebody else is going to train. And so it doesn't take a lot of your time. I mean, you can use our coaching model during your one-on-ones 5-10 minutes a week because you're not responsible for actually training your direct on that skill. You're responsible for providing them the process and the plan, and they are responsible for securing the training and doing the learning and then reporting back to you. So you come up with this list of websites or books or classes they can go to or whatever it is. And then you and them, you pick maybe one or two things from that list. So it might be books, or it might be go to a class, or it might be an online course, or it might be watch some videos on YouTube, whatever. And then you write a plan. for that resource. So let's say you wanted to teach, you wanted to coach one of your directs on project management, and you pick, we're gonna use books to learn project management, because there is a huge number of books on project management. Then you would develop a plan around books. So by this date, you will have selected a book. By this date, you will have the first two chapters of the book read. By this date, you will have half the book read. By this date, you will have the book finished. And you lay out a plan. And then as they go through those resources, whether it's books or courses or an online class or finding a mentor or shadowing somebody else, then you continue coming up with a plan. So you're going to read this book, you're going to draft a project plan based on the concepts you learned in the book, you're going to come up with a budget based on the concepts you learned in the book, all that, and then ultimately they're going to manage a project. So there's four steps in the model. You set a goal, you come up with a list of resources, you pick a resource and you create a plan, and then your direct implements the plan and reports back to you every week during the one-on-ones on how they're doing implementing that plan. And so since all really after you set the goal, all you're doing as the manager is giving them input on their plan, their timeline, it doesn't take a huge amount of your time. Again, 5 or 10 minutes a week. And the beauty of the coaching model is it's the same four steps whether you're coaching a top performer, right? Alex is my top performer, and I want to help him get a little bit better. Or whether you're coaching your lowest performer, right? Joe is really struggling, and I need to coach him to get him to standard. Then it's the same exact model whether you're coaching your top performer or your low performer. So you don't have to learn different ways of dealing with top performers versus low performers. They both get the same basic four steps.
Jenny, that came through quite strongly in our engagement survey and even in the post leadership workshop results across the board, that we've 3 years ago, not everyone in the business was on a performance review. So, and not everyone had, development discussions. So we've gotten so much better in doing that. But now the next part is, and what we scored lowly on was my manager helps me plan my professional and personal development.
Yeah.
And I think that's where this coaching model can come in, because the message that I send to the team is you're in charge of your development. Your manager's not going to make sure that you take charge of that and you do what you need to do. They'll help support you. And I think the coaching model will help with that. So if somebody has an aspiration, that's great. But, the manager's not going to drive that for them. They need to do it
right
for themselves. And I think, perhaps the coaching model will actually help with those development plans and development discussions that you have on a biannual basis, creating some checkpoints to make sure they see that through. Because a lot of the time, we get to the next review, go back and look at the development plan, and we see that some, a lot of things haven't been seen through or ticked off. That then leaves a bit of a sour taste in the employee's mouth. But really, it's on the staff member to drive that, but I think the managers can probably help in just checking in at those one-on-ones to make sure that they're on track if they need any further support or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I totally agree, Joanne. And I'll tell you, the more and more that I read about the state of work and the state of the workplace, and all these articles that you read about what do people want and what does it take to keep people engaged. And that's one of the things that I'm seeing more and more. The two things I'm seeing more and more of around retaining talent and keeping them engaged is feedback and professional development. The manager, I think, I really believe the manager who takes an active role in their direct's professional development has an opportunity to stand heads and shoulders above the crowd, because they're hungry for it. But again, that doesn't mean, Joanne, you're right, that doesn't mean that as managers, it's our responsibility to drive that. What our model does is it gives you a path. Here's a process. And then really, the direct is driving probably 90% of the process. and you're checking in and you're giving feedback and you're giving input. And so it's not hard, and people are hungry for it, and it's a way that to really set yourself above, heads and shoulders above the crowd, because most managers aren't doing it. Most of us are just in the weeds, right? We're in the swamp day to day. We're trying to drain the swamp, and you know, it's like you just want to say to your directs, "Do you not see I'm surrounded by alligators? Why are you talking to me, you know, about all that when we got alligators?" And so it's a great way to really make yourself stand out as a manager. So I will send you guys some materials there about that.
That would be good. Yeah, so top expectations in the team survey education. That was one of the top three. And one of the areas where we're not delivering is helping people plan their professional development. And it's probably the point that we're at now. We've got the performance reviews working well. Our next area to nail is the whole development piece. That's not saying that we need to develop everyone to be the next MD. I see the same things that you do, Danny. You know, learning and development is a key driver of engagement, and it does retain people if they feel like they're getting something, even if it's through the little short courses that we run throughout the year, or if it's actually setting them up as, you know, a high potential succession planning type person. It just, you know, it adds value, I guess, to what they're doing here, and it also helps us because they're becoming better at their jobs. It's a win-win all round. So,
yeah, I think a lot of people take that as a sign that the organization is invested in them as a person beyond what they're doing today, right? Because a lot of times what our directs might be learning or getting better at, it might not even necessarily benefit the organization today or tomorrow or next month or next year. It might be something that really the organization isn't going to see a return on for possibly 2 or 3 years. And so I think employees interpret that as a sign of the company, the organization really cares about me because they're investing these resources in me in a way that may not benefit them for until down the line in the future, which you can see. I mean, the natural conclusion is that's how it helps you with retention.
We've got 4 minutes left, so has anyone got anything burning in their mind that they haven't said that they want to throw out there before we let Danny get back to her usual program? Anyone? Steve, yes?
I'm sorry, Jeeve, I can't hear you.
You mentioned in coaching that the manager takes responsibility for the plan and the direct does the development plan. My question is, as a manager, how detailed does that plan have to be?
Oh, yeah, great question. So we recommend that at the beginning, it be more detailed rather than less. I hate hearing myself on echo. My voice does not sound like me. So we recommend when you're first starting that you err on the side of being more detailed because it's easier to move from more detailed to less detailed as your direct gets used to it than to start kind of high level, and if they don't do well, then try to go down in the weeds. It's easier to start in the weeds and then say, okay, now let's go up here, than to start high level and then when they mess up, say, oh, well, now we got to go down the weeds, because then directs interpret that as failure, right? Well, now you're having to get down in the weeds because I'm failing. So what we recommend is you start in the weeds and you say, look, we start everybody down in a pretty high level of detail, a pretty detailed plan. In fact, what we recommend is you start with a daily plan where they have one small task that they do every day, something that's only going to take them 10 or 15 minutes. And then after 2 or 3 weeks of that, then you start maybe going to 2 or 3 days, 4 or 5 days, once a week, every 2 weeks, and you get bigger. Because you can adjust better to the direct, starting specific and then adjusting up, than starting up here and trying to go down into the specifics. The experience of the directs is much more positive when we start detailed and then go high level than the other way around. So So I'll send you guys a podcast and some other materials that will really kind of walk you through each of those four steps.